If you're enjoying this podcast, please leave us a review and tap the follow button so that you never miss an episode.
Hello, welcome to RFRX. I have with me tonight a fantastic co-host, Sasha D'Souza. Sasha, how are you doing this evening?
I am doing well. Thanks, Kara. How are you?
Excellent. I am also doing well. Glad to be here on this fine day, which is both the celebration of Juneteenth, as well as we had Father's Day yesterday, and we are still in Pride Month. So we are in celebration mode over here. How about you?
Wonderful. Yeah, well, we don't officially have Juneteenth, and I think our Pride Month is on a slightly different time here in Australia, but for what it's worth, yeah, it's been fantastic to see the support. We're in an international world now, so there's been so many fantastic posts and support, and even from our leadership, government leadership as well, has been really great at promoting it, so it's excellent.
Really, oh, that's fantastic. See. Yeah, that was very ethnocentric of me to assume that everyone celebrated Pride and Father's Day and freedom on the same day.
Yeah, well, remember, we're upside down and on the other side of the planet here in Australia. So, and again, I'm happy to insert subtitles for anything that people may not understand about my accent.
Excellent. We do have the live transcription on, so, you know, we'll see if it gets it right.
I'll occasionally throw out a few g'day mates just to remind you where I'm all from.
Excellent, as you should, because apparently I forget. So. So without further ado, let's get into this. I am so pleased to be able to introduce our guest, who's one of my favorite returning guests, Rob Palmer. And Rob is a Guerrilla Skepticism on Wikipedia team member and skeptical activist who writes for Skeptical Inquirer as the well-known skeptic. He does public speaking and writing about contemporary skeptical issues and has interviewed conference speakers, scientists, TV personalities, including Star Trek's Q, who plays a deity. And many skeptical and atheist activists. He takes a special interest in combating dangerous beliefs and educating the public about the harm that often befalls vulnerable victims who trust in people who are making paranormal and supernatural claims. And while claims like these are commonly believed, Rob is going to remind us that extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. So tonight we will be examining how good the evidence is for some common paranormal and supernatural beliefs, as well as why so many people believe extraordinary claims without sufficient evidence. So, Rob, are you here?
I am here.
Take it away.
This is my hat trick. Three times in RFRX.
I am so excited. I think I've been here for all three of your talks, too, and they're some of my favorites.
Thank you. But this one stands out, but not only here, anywhere, because normally, as a skeptical activist, you don't go and talk about skepticism as a topic. You talk about a particular topic that's of interest to skeptics. Like I've done talks about the harm in believing in psychics and the Guerrilla Skeptics Project and critical thinking specifically. But this is about, I'm going to be covering what it is to be an activist skeptic. What is it to be a skeptic? What is a skeptical movement? Like what are the important things to have a skeptical mindset about things? That sort of thing. So it's going to be more general. And then, as you said, we will talk about some of the specific topics that are perhaps of more interest to people coming out of a religion than some of the other things, because the skepticism covers a lot of things, including vaccine denial and, you know, global warming denial and things like that, too. The whole alt-med thing is a big topic in skepticism, especially because it resulted in the COVID anti-vax movement. We're going to be talking about, this is going to be more about, I would call it old fashioned. Well, not quite. I was going to say old fashioned skepticism, but that's more Bigfoot and UFOs. So this is more
let me ask you something, if I can, Rob, before you go into it. So a lot of us that came from religion, the word skeptic was a taboo word. You know, we were taught to look down on anyone who was skeptical, that this was a misleading, and a bad thing. Can you explain what the word actually means in the proper terms?
So from Stephen Novella, who is the head of New England Skeptical Society and one of the biggest skeptic podcasts there is, A Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, I highly recommend. He said, being a functional skeptic requires knowledge of all the various ways in which we deceive ourselves, the limits and flaws in human perception and memory, the inherent biases and fallacies in cognition, and the methods that can help mitigate all of these flaws and biases. It's basically so we don't fool ourselves and we don't get fooled by other people.
Brilliant. Love that quote.
So that is. And one of the reasons I think it's important to talk about the topics we're going to talk about to this community specifically is because this is another quote by Steve Novella, coincidentally. I think that when you're raised to believe in life after death, angels, demons, ghosts, and other such religious pseudoscience, then paying someone to speak to the dead and get messages back isn't much of a leap. So that's one aspect he was talking specifically about, people believing in mediumship there. But it just goes, you know, on to some of the other beliefs in New Age, you know, mysticism and stuff. So definitely.
Interesting. So, you know, that's a really good point that you make there, Rob, that it seems like you've kind of made a connection between some of these beliefs that a lot of people have if they are in a religious environment where you're believing in angels and demons and things like that. Are you suggesting then that that sort of programs people to not be as skeptical about other potentially dangerous claims?
Absolutely, Carr, absolutely. You know, you're basically told to listen to authority, to believe that there is this other realm without really any evidence for it, or any good evidence, I shall say. You're told to believe it because other people believe it, because, you know, the authority figures in your church say it's true. And none of these are good reasons to believe anything. And we're going to go into that a little bit later, the logical fallacies that people use to convince other people things are true that aren't, that have no good evidence for, and the things you in fact convince yourself of because you think fallaciously also. So we'll talk about that too, I hope.
Oh, excellent. Okay, I'm excited. Well, tell us a little bit more about what is the skeptical movement? What is this all about? How'd you get involved in it?
Well, so the movement has to do with, you know, or an organized pushback on when I say fake news, you know, this has been going on for a very long time, and there's all different things that the movement has been pushed back on. Initially, you know, what was in the media all the time were UFOs and alien abductions and crop circles. And, you know, we still have those things. People have been paying attention to the, you know, to the leaked Navy UFO reports that that keep appearing in CNN covers and ABC and all the news stations. Like, it's new stuff and it's new. It's, you know, real new revelations. Like,
don't forget Bigfoot, Yeti, and giant worms and all of these sorts of things as well.
Giant worms. You'll have to tell me about that later. I don't know about that specific one.
We've got a new one. Sasha started a new one.
Worms. That was a movie, Tremors, I think, or something like that. But
I remember that.
So if you're interested to find out about the movement itself, there's a Wikipedia article, and I'm going to be talking a lot about Wikipedia, because one of the things I do is edit Wikipedia with a team of scientific skeptics, is the article on scientific skepticism itself. I'm going to share that screen now. And I think someone could put this in the chat. So this defines what it means to be a scientific skeptic, also called a rational skeptic. And the process is sometimes referred to as skeptical inquiry. And it gives a good understanding of what the movement is about. It's interesting because Wikipedia is a living, you know, thing. So the articles have changed over time. So this, which I just clicked to now, did it change? By the way, I can't tell if I'm doing a share screen, if that works. Can you see this
That's
now?
Perfect. Perfect.
Yes.
So you can see the following quotation relate to science.
Yes.
Okay, good. So that's good. It shares the whole browser. That's good to know. Okay, so this is an older version that has a lot of quotes about what is scientific skepticism, which was your first question. And you can, by the way, in Wikipedia, you can also go back to the history tab and pull up any old version of a page. So this is about a year ago. These were on the page, and they are no longer on the page, but I think they're worth to talk about now. So it boils down to construct and understand a reasoned argument, especially important to recognize a fallacious or fraudulent argument, as I mentioned before, right? Carl Sagan said, it's a way of skeptically interrogating the universe with a fine understanding of human fallibility. And it's interesting that he said science, because in fact, a lot of times what science does is it pushes the envelope of our understanding, but then it's just assumed by scientists that now we understand that, we'll move on. But the fact is, it's up to scientific skeptics to like hold the line there, because the other people, you know, go crazy with it, and they forget what we learned, or they ignore what we learned. And it's not scientists' job to do that piece of the job. So that's kind of the purview of scientific skepticism. you know, clearly here, Daniel Loxton said it's the practice of studying the paranormal through the scientific claims through the lens of science, right? And this goes on. So you could, you know, look at these on your own later. But basically, it's a combination of backing up what science says and pushing back on discredited things that are being said. And it's also a means of consumer protection, especially when we get to the area of people being taken advantage of by con artists, psychics, mediums, people selling snake oil, you know, not literally anymore, but that's what they do.
Well, and I think we've had, maybe it's not, like you said, not literally snake oil, but I think there are plenty of people selling purported miracle drugs right now. Yep. So.
And what surprised me, I didn't know this when I first heard that term, that was a thing. That is the bottle and it said snake oil. I don't know if it really was released from a snake, but that is what they sold to do all these magical cures.
Wow. And people you're fell saying, for
it. Yeah, it shows the human tendency. People are looking to believe in something. Is that absolutely why the skeptic movement is so important to help people from being exploited?
Absolutely. And it's a shame that a lot of people don't understand that, and they'll push back on us like, you know, why you just don't believe anything? Why are you being so cynical? It's like, yeah, no, we believe the truth.
Right.
We'll help you figure out what is true. Put it that way, so you don't get taken advantage of.
Are you saying that we do our own research?
With the help of people who have targeted that. I see several people who have done this kind of research have joined the meeting. That's fantastic. And their ears are going to ring if they stay on.
Excellent. Excellent. I am super excited. Well, tell us more about this, Rob. What kind of topics fall under skepticism or skeptical inquiry that you could tell us a little bit more about?
Okay, so it's a whole bunch of things. I'm going to share this page from Wikipedia, which is, so you can label any article in Wikipedia with a project. And these are the projects that are under Project Skepticism. And these are the page names. Look who's number one, Marjorie Taylor Greene.
Uh-oh.
Giant space lasers.
Jewish space lasers, as I think.
That's the one.
Yes, and QAnon, and the Catholic Church is run by Satan, and yeah, those are the latest ones of hers. Some of these I can tell you why they're here, and some I don't understand. All right, Tesla's all the time. Anybody who's into quantum, you know, whatever. Oh, Tesla was like held down because, you know, people didn't know one because that he created free energy and people didn't want him. You know, you didn't know Gwyneth Paltrow. I have written about her numerous times because of her Goop and the Netflix show The Goop Lab. Jenny McCarthy, anti-vax, and we got QAnon. So this is a mixed bag of people, of topics that you might recognize, Bermuda Triangle, you know, scientists, because, hey, some people don't believe Charles Darwin was actually, you know, legitimate. Quantum mechanics, why would that be there? Because it's a field of physics. Well, you know why, because everybody who wants you to believe something crazy with no evidence says, oh, you don't understand it because it's quantum mechanics.
So, I've heard that before.
Yeah, easily thrown around word.
So some religious things, Shroud of Turin, right? So,
Dunning-Kruger effect you've got there too. That's an interesting one. We've often heard that referred to.
Absolutely. There are people that you might not know their names, but they're famous TV personalities like Tyler Henry. There's somebody on this on the session right now who's written tons about Mr. Tyler Henry. I'll be talking about that a little bit. But anyway, so we have topics that run the gamut.
Excellent. Okay. And so we're there's no way we're going to be able to get into all of those this evening, but I think you're going to go over a few of them for us in a little bit. So I cannot wait, but these are great resources you're sharing here. I think you might have some books that you're going to tell us about as well, right?
Yeah. So because there are books, there are YouTube videos, there are podcasts. So I'm going to just tell you about a few of my favorite ones. I will put them in the chat right now. Since we have it open. So, you know, the first one I found was the SGU, which, sorry for abbreviating, I'll tell you what that is. It's a Skeptic's Guide to the Universe. I mentioned that before. That's like probably the number one skeptic and science podcast.
And they have a new one coming out too, I believe.
A new what?
A new book coming out as well.
A new book, right. Well, so that's the name of their book too. So these are podcast names, but you're correct. They have a book. I'll get to that. And they have a new book coming out. That's right. So Sasha's up on this. So The Skeptic Zone is from Australia, a fantastic resource, even though you'd say, well, it's Australian, but they cover things of interest to Americans. And they have Americans like Susan Garbick and me on there periodically. And even people from Canada, like I don't know if Adrienne Hill is here, but she's one of the speakers. And let's see, Skeptoid is fantastic. That's a really short segment, 10 minutes maybe, if you're listening or reading it shorter, it, like one particular topic every week. I used to use this all the time for friends at work who said, oh, Rob, did you hear about the giant crystal skulls? Those prove there were giants on the earth, just like in the Bible. So, okay, like Google Skeptoid, crystal skull. You updated an episode on that, and then I just send him the transcript because every audio episode has a text transcript for people who refuse to listen to audio. Point of Inquiry is the podcast of the organization that I write for. So that's a good one too. You mentioned books. Obviously, there's so many books. I don't even know where to begin. But I'll you know, just some of the ones that are go-to standards. The Demon Haunted World by Carl Sagan. Why People Believe Weird Things. Sharma, the Skeptic's Guide to the Universe, as Sasha mentioned, as a book, a really fantastic resource to understand and to think more critically in your own life.
You know, just the really astute viewers may notice one of those books is on the shelf behind me.
My video panel view is not large enough to tell. Which one
is it? Mine is either. I have the Why People Believe Weird Things back there, the Michael Shermer. Very, very fun book. Although The Demon Haunted World is another of my favorites with the baloney detection kit.
Yes.
And how, even though it was written 20-odd years ago, 30 years ago, was it? Demon Haunted World?
Probably that long. I read it as a young person.
Yeah.
When I so much of it younger stacks man's up. Clothes, I'll say.
And, yeah, he was able to see how, you know, particularly how social media or how the news networks would perhaps become more polarized and give us misinformation. It was very interesting, but still very relevant. And if anyone's worried about not keeping up with all these links and these excellent references that Rob's telling us about, we'll make sure that we put them in the chat, but we'll also put them as a post at the bottom of the YouTube video once it's uploaded.
Oh, yeah, thank you. And also, so the page that I pointed to before, Scientific Skepticism on Wikipedia, has a section, Notable Skeptic Media, and there's a whole separate one, list of notable skeptics, conferences, organizations. So everything I talk about will be somewhere in one of these things.
Thank you.
Excellent. That is super helpful, because there's no way we're going to remember all this, but you've given us a ton of reading. Yes. You've given us homework. Y'all didn't know we were going to have homework on tonight's show, but surprise.
So Rob, tell us, were you always a skeptic? Were you always like, you know, open to things, or were you closed-minded before? What's your journey?
Yeah, when I came out of the womb, I was a skeptic and I didn't believe anything anyone told me. No, like most young people in the 70s, it was my time. So worse than, I would say, for people growing up now, because there was no internet. Someone had a TV show about, you know, Bigfoot or the Loch Ness Monster on one of the three channels we could watch. That was pretty much it. Couldn't like go and find a Google search. Maybe you walked 5 miles to the library and hoped to find the books, but you know, who's going to do that? Right. And
we believe
the books in the library were like mystical books about these things, like they're real, especially UFOs, which I found and was really into. Oh yeah, people are being abducted. There's aliens on the moon. There are all these different races.
Loch Ness monsters. And
pretty much every person who I talked to who is now an activist skeptic was like that, at least as a teenager. Yeah, and I was absolutely no exception.
There was a famous TV show too that we were all Leonard Nimoy from Star Trek hosted, and that was a shocking show that made us make things look real that we're
absolutely
not.
Absolutely, the science officer of the Enterprise is telling us that Bigfoot is a real thing and aliens are real, you know, besides Vulcans, because we know those are real.
Unfortunate.
Yeah.
So what changed your mind? What got you to the point where you're at now?
Well, interestingly, really weird turn of events. I write for a magazine now called Skeptical Inquirer, and that was the magazine I found in the library as a teenager that had a cover story on, I don't remember which one it was, but it might have been The Shroud of Turin or The Face on Mars or something like that. And you go, wow, that's cool. I got to read about this. And it's like, oh, it's saying it's not true. Oh my God, there's evidence that it doesn't make any sense. All the stuff they're saying about it in the news is just wrong. Like, what is this? And then what's interesting is some of the stuff you say, oh yeah, I never believe that. I never believe that. Of course, that's ridiculous. But wait a minute, I thought this was real. Mm-hmm. But so getting a subscription to that magazine and reading all of the articles and, you know, the thorough investigations that were done to these things just made it clear that most of what you hear about those kinds of claims are just nonsense. And it wasn't that long that, you know, I pretty much did 180 degrees on it.
Wow. Well, good thing you came across that magazine.
Yeah, yeah. One might say it was fate.
But you wouldn't say that.
No, I wouldn't. Or a sign. A sign from Carl Sagan. Yeah. But
so then how did you go from reading that magazine to getting really involved in this, you know, whole movement and writing for said magazine and so on?
So the podcasts were my entry way. I was really into astronomy. I had always been my whole life. I had a telescope as a little kid. And the first thing I did when I found out about podcasting and I got an iPod was to try to find science podcasts. And one of them was The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe came up when I Googled universe. It's like, whoa, that's cool. Let me listen to this. And it was partly about science, but it was also about this thing I'd really had just dropped as it, you know, once I started not to believe those things as a teenager, I went decades without, okay, this is all nonsense. That's all I need to know. I don't have to worry about it. But then it'd be, wow, there's a movement that tries to help other people figure out that this is nonsense. And The Skeptic's Guide to the Universe at the time had already been running maybe 6 or 7 years. I went back and I listened to every weekly episode. I was unemployed at the time, so I did it while I was house cleaning or food shopping or whatever. And I caught up and I've been listening to every episode since. And of course, they talk about other things, like there are conferences and there are these magazines, none of which I knew except for Skeptical Inquirer. And then I found out about the Skeptic Zone and I started listening to the Skeptic Zone from Australia. And a woman named Susan Gerbic was on it, who's on, I see her on the screen right here. Susan Gerbic was talking about her organization of the Guerrilla Skeptics on Wikipedia and how you could fight nonsense and pseudoscience in the world's most important source of information, Wikipedia. And I said, oh, this is cool. Let me look up and Google some of this stuff. So I Googled it and I found out that there was an astrology site which was saying Susan Gerbic was the devil. People on her team were evil. And then that's it, sign me up.
Now, Susan, can we just confirm you are not in fact the devil? Yeah, you're
it actually has a hat with to be, you know, that.
Well, that's exactly what the devil would do.
So, that is exactly right. So I joined the Guerrilla Skeptics. I started editing. What the team does is we edit Wikipedia within the rules of Wikipedia. It's very strict, you know, to add science, to take out claims that don't have evidence, the paranormal, supernatural things, pseudoscience, really, really you know, incorrect stuff. We write pages from scratch. We improve pages that exist. We make smaller edits that are maybe, you know, small but very important. And one of the really interesting things is since this project has been in existence, 116 million page views for the pages that Susan and the team have done. It's an astounding impact on the world that this could be done. And this is because Wikipedia is, you know, it is literally the number one source of information in the English speaking world now. Mm. Like the only websites which get more traffic than Wikipedia are Google itself, YouTube and Facebook, and maybe one other one like that. Wow. But, you know, they're not information sources. So if people want information, they're going, as you know now, if you ask Alexa or Siri for some information, it pulls it from Wikipedia too. So journalists use it and they'll read what we wrote and then write it into their articles. We have the evidence of this on USA Today and CNN and things like that. So the impact is amazing.
Wow. Well, thank you all for what you're doing to help make the world a better place.
So, you know, my story was, I was really happy doing that. It's anonymous. And then I decided, well, I did a talk about this at one of the skeptical conferences, SciCon, to promote it and try to get other people to join. And I also wrote an article, because I did that, about it and sent it into the magazine, the same magazine that I found when I was a teenager. And they published it. I was like, I didn't know that would happen, but they did. And then a week later, I got, hey, that was really good. You want to come and work for us? So it's like,
yes.
I don't have any questions. Yes.
Yeah. Well, wait. wait a minute, you weren't skeptical about anything?
Well, the guy who contacted me, I knew his name, and because he's like written like 50 books, and he's the one who invented the term chupacabra, and he wrote the book on the chupacabra. He's like he's like a really well-known paranormal investigator, and he's a deputy editor of the magazine. So yeah, no, I wasn't skeptical.
That's all right. That sounds amazing. I wish people would just offer me jobs like that, but I don't. So
we have
blame
two other
them.
People at least here that write for the same magazine, Susan Garbick, and I saw Kenny Biddle before. I think he's still here. Wave, hey. Kenny, if anyone sees you on the screen.
Hey, there he is.
So we're going to talk about Kenny a little bit later and Susan's work maybe on the specific topics because they're excellent. Into these things.
Excellent. I am so glad that you brought your friends as well. Well, let's get into some of these topics. What are some topics that you want to talk about? I know we sort of touched already on religiosity and how that might impact belief in the supernatural or the paranormal. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so let me share this. So this was a Pew Research poll, and it looked at religiosity, and I'll scroll to the top. New Age beliefs common among both religious and non-religious Americans. And it broke it down. Interestingly, they did Christian. I don't know why they didn't break it up into other religions too. But so the one that really, I have found very interesting because I talk about the harm in believing in psychics is the second column, belief in psychics. So all U.S. adults, it's 41%, right? And then there's a mixed bag. It goes from, 33 to 46 amongst the Christian religions. And the only thing that reasonably inoculates you against a belief is if you come out as an atheist, right? If you can call yourself an atheist, it's only 10. So I'm surprised it's that high, but still, that's a quarter, right, of the population versus if you're a Christian of some sort. Yeah. The thing that's scary to me is this lower number, the nothing in particular. So you've come out of a religion, you don't associate with any, you're not going to say you're a Jehovah's Witness or a Catholic anymore, but now you believe even more than those people do. That's why I wanted to ask the question in the poll.
Well, would you like to look at that?
Yes, poll? Let's look at that.
Let's pull that up. Let me see if I am able to do that. Okay, let me share the results. Okay, can y'all see that?
I got to stop sharing my screen, I think.
Oh, fair enough. Yeah. So let's go down and look at that. Let's see, which question was that about? It was the last question, right? For those who left a religion and now consider themselves non-religious. Looks like 58% of respondents said that they now believe in fewer paranormal claims than they did previously.
Interesting.
Yeah. 6% believe in more paranormal claims, though. That's interesting. And then 24% have not changed their belief in the paranormal since leaving religion. So that's
I'm looking at these other ones. This is fascinating. So there's at least one person here who believes they have supernatural powers. I don't know 9% how many that was, but that's interesting. And some people are not sure if they have supernatural powers. I don't know how that works. Okay.
One of their powers isn't, certainty.
Okay.
So that's an interesting, this poll is very interesting that leaving religion does not necessarily inoculate us against a particular way of thinking and doesn't necessarily mean that people can let go of different beliefs. So what do you put that down to, Rob? Is that just humans being humans or?
I believe part of the problem is just the way the human brain has evolved. It's not really as rational as we like to think it is. It's not as accurate as we think it is. You'll see the link later for my Critical Thinking 101, which talks about the imperfections in, the functioning of your brain regarding taking in data, figuring out what it means, remembering the data, and then how you process the data. All of those things we're not really very good at, right? We think we're good, but we're not. And it lends us to believe in things which just aren't true. And we'll talk a little bit about the logical fallacy aspect of that, which is the thinking process with the data that we have in our heads, is not the best. I wouldn't say programmed, but like we have evolved to think in certain ways to help us survive and have children, right? That's what evolution's about. That's what survival of the species is about. It was for our circumstances on the African savanna. It doesn't necessarily mean it's perfect. It's just good enough. than the other creatures around us who we were competing with. And it certainly wasn't, you know, in the vein of a modern society. It was, you know, where something didn't move more than a few miles per hour, you know, thinking of things like that. You didn't really have to understand everything about the world that we have to understand in the modern world. So it's even easier than it was for our ancestors, I would say, to get screwed up on what's true and what's not.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, you know, along those lines, we've had a couple of people ask a question in the chat that I'm not sure if you want to address it now or later, but some people are kind of wondering, like, what do you do if someone that you're talking to just doesn't actually value evidence or reason to begin with? Is there a way to have these conversations about skepticism and skeptical thinking with someone who is either just very, very credulous or has some other way of deciding the veracity of claims?
Helen's putting her thumb up, so I don't know what that means, but I'm curious.
I think Helen is demonstrating her magical power.
Don't ask.
Oh man. Well, it, of course it depends on the circumstance. It's just like when you're arguing with someone on the internet, you know, what do you want out of it? It's very unlikely that you're going to change somebody's mind by, you know, giving them demonstrable facts when they are on the other side of an argument. And this has been proven scientifically. If someone has deeply held beliefs and you challenge them with facts, you're more likely to have them come out believing even more strongly what they were arguing in the first place.
The backfire effect, right?
Yeah. So it doesn't always happen. If it's not something someone believes very strongly, you might make some headway. But the other thing that we learn here at Recovering from Religion is the street epistemology approach of Socratic questioning, right? As opposed to saying, no, you're wrong, and this is why, look at this link. It's like, why do you believe that? Please explain it to me so I can understand it. And that sometimes puts seeds of doubt in their mind.
I respect that, Rob, because there's that well-known quote, now I may butcher this, so correct me, that we shouldn't try and use facts and logic to reason with someone if it wasn't facts and logic that got them to that position in the first place. So
yeah, someone famous in the skeptical movement said that. I'm not going to even say who, because most people don't agree with it. It's more like you can't logic and rationalize somebody out of a position they got to when they didn't use logic and rational effect, whatever. But in fact, that's not true, because like many of us here are evidence that that's not true, right? Sure. There have been very famous people who became skeptical activists or atheist activists who were deep into their religion, right? So, and the thing that convinced them was something like that sometimes, a little bit of evidence, and it made a crack in their thinking and they started to think differently. So, that may be that phrase you started with may sometimes be true, but you really can't rely on it to be always true. And so you don't, you know, it's a little disappointing, because then people say, well, I'm not going to even try.
Right. No, good point. Thank you. Yeah. So we can assist somebody in answer to that question to perhaps open their mind and to see things differently, but we have to do it in the right way, in a non-confrontational way.
Absolutely.
So not coming at people like, how could you be so stupid to not know this?
Yeah, that rarely works for some reason.
Shockingly.
Doesn't work with religion, and it doesn't work with any other kind of claims, political either. So.
Excellent points. Well, do you want to talk to us about some particular claims that...
Well, the things I think that people may believe more strongly in who were religious than not and come out of it than maybe if somebody who was raised without a belief, maybe ghosts, and that ghosts haunt houses, and maybe things also, they haunt things like Dybbuk boxes, Kenny Biddle, or dolls. Kenny has some weird ass collection of spooky dolls that are supposedly haunted.
I recently inherited a very spooky doll that if I believed in ghosts and demons, I'm pretty sure it was is inhabited by one.
Haven't you seen the movie documentaries about those haunted dolls?
The documentaries, yes.
Absolutely. I cannot watch those. And I told Kenny this. I was at his house once, and his dolls freaked me out. It's like, this is one of these emotional, we talk about this in RFR and religion, right? Coming out of religion, you have this rational center where you've come to decide this is not true, whatever this is, right? And yet there's emotions in your brain which are programmed as a child, which are harder to drop. And so, yeah, I don't want to see spooky dolls when I'm sleeping in my room.
Yeah, it still scares me. I don't believe in it, and I cannot look at that doll. And
My other thing is UFOs. And like I said, I was really into that as a kid. That, you know, people get abducted and tractor beam through their wall somehow, into the alien spacecraft, and they're probed in places you don't want to be probed usually. So it's like, yeah, I cannot watch like any of the movies that are, you know, about that happening, like they're real.
Interesting you say that. There's certain things that, you know, are still have that sort of, we have our reflexive defenses up against.
I can talk about it in the daytime, but I don't want to be thinking about it when I fall asleep.
Right.
Especially because the scientific analysis of why the alien abduction scenario can happen is a real thing. It has to do with sleep paralysis and, you know, and the way your brain is operating when that happens. And that's a real thing. So that can happen to me. So, you know, I don't want to be thinking of a mode where I get sleep paralysis and I'm thinking of being abducted and probed by aliens. So I'm going to try not to watch that when I'm going to bed.
That's fair.
That's interesting. Now, I know a lot of people deliberately try and challenge the things that used to be really scary to them.
They're crazy people.
Well, I tried it. I watched one of the most horrific movies I could, or horror movies, and then I deliberately walked outside on a cold, dark, stormy, wet night at 2 a.m. to challenge it and to see how my reflexes. And I totally hear what you're saying, Rob. You know, it caused that visceral reaction in me, and, you know, looking behind the bushes and behind the wall and waiting for the ghost to jump out at me. But I deliberately pushed myself, almost like therapy, to try and, you know, confront the very thing that was a fear.
Yeah, exposure therapy, I think it's called. Yeah, that makes sense. Especially if it's something that's debilitating. You know, I'm not really debilitated by these issues, but yeah, absolutely. If it's something that's changing the way you live your life, that's probably a good thing to do.
That's fair. Well, tell us about that. Then you kind of mentioned with, you know, the alien abduction thing, that there's some, you know, other reasonable explanation that could explain it, sleep paralysis. What about ghosts and hauntings? Like, is there evidence?
Ghosts and hauntings. Kenny Biddle's ears are perking up. So I'm going to share a page here, which is, let's see, share screen. So, all right. So Kenny's the man about this subject. And I'm actually trying to get him to talk specifically here. You're still looking at the Kenny page, or just click something
else?
Yeah. I actually want him to talk about his experience on that subject specifically. So I'm just going to give you a little preview, because it's amazing. He is actually the first speaker I saw at the very first skeptical conference I went to. And it was fascinating, because I never knew there was such a person. Kenny was a ghost hunter. He was deep into it. He was trying to prove that he had photographs of ghosts, and he had all his equipment that could do that. And then he had the wherewithal to understand eventually that, no, this is not evidence of ghosts. I've been fooling myself, and all the other people saying it's evidence is wrong. And he's now on the other side of it. So he writes, he does paranormal investigations, and he writes from the scientific perspective of, you don't have any proof there that you think you have.
Oh, that must be so disappointing for the people who think they have ghosts.
Well, maybe, unless they're, you know, like, you know, the movies where, you know, they want to kill you and drag you into the fireplace in the basement.
If that's happening,
that's in your house. So then, you know, maybe it's not so disappointing if you can see that's not really what you think it is.
Yeah. It might be terrifying to learn that you just have a murderer living in your house or something. It's not a ghost.
So Kenny, if you want to see a gist, I wrote this article, Kenny Biddle, the Skeptic Investigators, and it gives a summary of his career to date. And you can look at all these articles on his site, which are amazing, because it's like he goes on ghost hunts with current ghost hunters and, you know, records it and says, here are the problems. He goes to Zach Bagans' supposedly haunted museum in Las Vegas, and I think he was on the do not enter list, but he went with a cleverly disguised COVID mask, because I didn't know who he was. Zach walked right by him, the owner of the museum, walked right by him. And, you know, Zach Bag, he's written a bunch of articles on this. He's got this museum, which is, I don't remember how much money it is, but it's a ridiculous price. And it's like all these things are supposed to be haunted, and they have all these backstories, and it's just made up crap. So one I was a little bit involved with was a thing called the Dybbuk box, which is this Jewish mysticism claim that this wine cabinet is, you know, is possessed by a demon. And Kenny did the investigation and found out that no, the guy just made it up, and he even admitted it. But it's like in Zach Bagans' museum. So, and actually they made a movie about it. I forgot what the name of this. Paranormal, what the name of it? I don't know.
Oh.
But yeah,
Paranormal Activity. That was a scary movie.
They made a movie about this. And of course, it probably said based on a true story. And then you find out like all of the stuff, like Elaine Warren, the Warrens as a couple, you know, made all this stuff up. They hired people to write stories. And then you get stuff like, I don't remember who specifically, The Exorcist, but stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all these people believe these stories like they were, you know, a true story. And yet, no, the evidence is not there in any way to show that they are. So Kenny's the guy about that kind of stuff.
Okay, I'm going to have to talk to Kenny later about this. Yep. This is really fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
so that's there's another thing I want to point you at is the Wikipedia page for haunted house. One of my team members on Wikipedia rewrote that page, and it's a really good description of, you know, what's with haunted houses. You know, what is the evidence and what's not the evidence. Wikipedia article, haunted house.
Okay, I just posted that. Yeah.
So the things that can cause a visceral reaction in us, the noise, the winds, the temperature, the gas leaks, all those sorts of things that can result in people feeling.
A lot of reasons, but one of the bottom line is if you're pre-set to believe in something that you're looking for, you're going to come away with evidence you believe reinforces that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's regarding hauntings or anything, really.
Yeah.
Well, there's a famous series said, I want to believe. So I'd love Absolutely. To challenge myself. I want to go through haunted building.
I made this backdrop. Well, I found this backdrop somewhere on the internet because I thought it was cool. But I was looking for the compliment to I want to believe with the UFO hanging there. And I want, you know, I was looking for something that said, I want to know. Right.
Mm. Yeah. Right?
I want to know the truth. I Googled all that. There is no poster. There's money to be made in that.
Yeah.
Mm. And Kenny's got a store, so maybe you could think about that.
Ooh.
Brilliant.
Okay. We'll be buying those next week. I'm ready. I want to know. That's great. So I guess spoiler alert, if we read that haunted house wiki, we're gonna find out there's not a whole lot of evidence for actual hauntings.
Pretty much. Yeah. Mm. I had my own experience with Kenny in that he invited me and some other friends on a haunted mansion trip, and he and then slept over in the house overnight. This is the White Hill Mansion in New Jersey.
Oh, yes.
And I went and visited, but then I saw the place and it was like full of mold and like holes where there could be rats. And I was more afraid of that kind of thing than ghosts. So I didn't stay overnight, but I stayed well into the evening. It was dark. I walked up alone in a dark floor because there's no electricity that was working there. And I had my phone and I was playing the Ghostbusters theme. You know, I was daring them to come out and get me and show themselves. And Kenny wrote a really good article about that investigation there. But the thing is, that mansion is believed to be haunted. And, you know, all ghost hunters go there and they say they find things. They find electronic voice phenomena, which is recordings that supposedly prove ghosts are talking through radio waves. And yeah, no, there's nothing there.
Oh yeah, let's not even get into the whole, was it the e-meter or the whatever those contraptions are?
Yeah. Kenny does a good job, because he used to work with some of them, I guess, of, you know, diagnosing what those equipments really do, what they fail to do, and what the ghost hunters claim they do, which is not really what they do.
Wow.
Interesting.
Now that all dovetails in. So we're talking about spirits, and spirits are either demonic entities, according to the belief, or they are the souls of departed humans. So how can you then talk about, you know, maybe proof of the existence of a soul or reincarnation, past lives?
Yeah. So like that's a whole big thing, which, right, religious people are primed to believe in. Because probably even if you decide your holy book is wrong with the details, well, the basics are right, and there's some kind of afterlife. And a lot of people who leave one religion go searching through other religions because they want that to be true, right? Again, I want to believe. And this has been programmed into them, and therefore they, you know, go looking for what all the holy books say about that. And then that's reinforced by seeing these stories of ghosts, because what else are ghosts but, you know, dead people, right? Because, well, actually. There could be other things. People just assume, I don't know what this is. It's a dead person. How do you know it's not a time traveler that's stuck in an interdimensional warp and you can't quite see all of them? It was in a Star Trek episode, Next Generation, like that.
Yeah.
Right. But no, you know, it's definitely a dead person. So, you know, that's one of the things. And the other thing is, yes, there is all of this new age stuff about astral projection and, you know, consciousness can leave your body. You have a near-death experience and you see the light and then people on the other end of that, and you either see Jesus or you see Muhammad. And all of this plays into that. People go to therapists or hypnotists who do past life regression, you know, claim people were reincarnated. All of that plays together to reinforce, you know, those initially held beliefs. And one thing I've actually heard on the Recovering from Religion line is people don't know the details of this maybe, but they'll say, yeah, I heard science knows there's a soul. They even weighed it, right? So that's come up more than once. So let me show you the Wikipedia.
42 article. Grams or something? Or something.
Very
like that.
Close, 21 grams.
20 grams.
Soul weighs 21 grams. And today I had Cheerios, and I'm looking at the label I ripped off right now. It's got 21 grams of whole grain for serving.
You ate soul of
Cheerios. Is that a marketing thing on purpose, or is that a wild coincidence? 21 grams whole grain per serving of Cheerios. Okay. So, yeah. So, you know, this experiment was done in almost medieval times, 1907. And this article talks about all of the flaws. And to go down to the last sentence in the lead, the case has been cited as an example of selective reporting. It's been rejected by the scientific community, but it popularized the concept that the soul has weight, specifically it's 21 grams. So this is one of the things that, you know, it's out there, because once you put one of these things out there and people want to believe it, again, they want to believe, maybe you've just been talked about in your church, science has proved there's a soul, near-death experience, 21 grams. It's very hard to shake that, because people don't go looking for stuff that refutes what they have been told and want to believe. So they're not going to go to this Wikipedia article, right? They're not going to Google 21 grams soul hoax, you know, no. But for people who are on the fence and really want to know the truth, it's out there. The truth is out there.
The truth is out there.
From the other thing. From Fox Mulder.
It's good to know.
It's just not what Fox Mulder usually thought it was.
Yeah.
But that's good point you make there about... Sorry, Kari.
Oh, no, go ahead. You're good.
Well, scientific proof. So people will always find a study that backs up their preconceived notions or biases if they want to. How do people actually go beyond and not just look at the heading of this so-called study or proof, but actually delve into it?
Yeah, so one of the ways that I found to do that is if someone makes a claim you're not familiar with, now that we have, you know, Dr. Google, you go to Google and you put the claim and you say hoax, skepticism, you know, that kind of thing. And it's very easy to find the alternative information. Mm. And then you can compare it. And, you know, in my experience, every time you do that, you know, the original stuff just doesn't hold up. So on the topic of the soul, I want to show one more page before we move on from that. I met this person at PsyCon, a Wikipedia article, Susan Blackmore. So she, like Kenny, has an interesting experience with this. She actually was a firm believer in out-of-body experiences, and she went to university to try to prove this, right? And she originally wrote something, here is, but to dismiss the experience of out-of-body experiences as just imagination would be impossible without being dishonest in how it had felt at the time, because she had one, right? It felt quite real. Everything looked vivid. So she actually tried to prove this, became a scientist, and then came to the conclusion that she talks about her 30-year-old out-of-body experience, convinced her of the reality. But now she understands, after careful experiments, and it changed all that. She found no psychic phenomena, only wishful thinking, self-deception, experimental error, and occasionally fraud. And she became a skeptic. And now, you know, she writes on the other side of that. So it's the most interesting thing to me when you find someone who was deep into it, like her or Mr. Biddle, and by investigating, had their minds changed to the point where now they actually preach the other side of it, you know, with the evidence.
And I expect that's also rare sometimes for, you know, people to do that, even if, you know, they do come to realize that there's not evidence for their claim. You know, it takes a lot for someone to actually then come out and publicly say, actually, I was completely wrong. And let me tell
you
how.
Yeah. If we get the fallacies at the end, I actually have a list of them that all play into this. And that is absolutely one of them, Kara. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Most people, you've spent your whole life in something. You are not going to do that. And so in Recovering from Religion, like we have the Clergy Project, for people mm-hmm. who have been trained as a minister, a priest, a rabbi, an imam, and come to decide after investigating it more while they're preaching to people about the stuff that, no, I don't believe this anymore, then what do? Right? Mm-hmm. A good percent of them, this is the only thing they know how to do to make a living. They have a mortgage to pay off. They have a spouse, maybe who's married them because they're in this religion. So sometimes they just fake it. And we actually have the Clergy Project to help people get out of that circumstance where they're being hypocrites, right? Yeah. And I don't know what the percent is, but probably not a large number that would leave. And it's probably true of people who are deep into this kind of stuff, whatever it be, you know, saying they do exorcisms or they're ghost hunters or they're, you know, they're mediums, to then realize, no, I'm wrong. Okay, I'll just drop it and say I was wrong. It's very hard. Flat earthers. There have been very few. There have been some, but very few active flat earthers who had YouTube channels, whoever, who came out and said, no, now I've investigated it, I was wrong.
No, Rob, yeah. There's a famous quote that somebody shared with me, and I think it applies. You know, when an honest man finds out that he is wrong, he will either cease being wrong or cease being honest.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Was that Mark Twain? Mark Twain apparently says that.
I think so. I could have got that quote wrong. My apologies. If anybody can correct me in the chat, feel free to. But that does apply. People may get to a point where a conscious decision needs to be made for whatever reason. Maybe they literally can't get out of that situation. Or there it is. Well, that's one of them.
That's another one. Yeah. And again, it's attributed to Mark Twain. I don't know if he really said that, but I have used that quote a lot. And this is so true. This comes, like you said, well, you know, how do you talk to somebody who believes something, especially mm-hmm. this kind of stuff, who they've seen evidence, it's not good evidence, but they think it's good evidence. You know, they've either fooled themselves into believing something, they've been befooled by other people for, you know, to make a dollar, or just mm-hmm. because the people believe it and they've told them it. And it's very hard to convince them that they're wrong.
Mm-hmm. Cognitive dissonance. Yeah. Well, that's very interesting. And I guess that does kind of go back to some of those, again, the religious beliefs being kind of wrapped up in some of the way people might come absolutely. To these other paranormal beliefs. Yeah,
so one of the other ones is the belief that there is precognition and prophecy, and people have powers to see the future through the supernatural realm in some way, right? And we currently call those people psychics. If you're in a religion, you call them a prophet, and there's still enough of those around, mm-hmm. right? It's the prophet of the religion. But people who are on the street, they might say it's from God or they might not, but we call those people psychics. People who mm-hmm. go one step further and claim they can talk to, well, have dead people talk back to them are mediums. Right. Mm. And this is also, you know, something that's highly believed by religious folks, because if there's a soul and there's a spirit, then why can't you talk to them? Right.
Right. Yeah. And then if you start to debunk the idea that you could talk to them, then I wonder if that could also start to make people feel uneasy that the whole thing is beginning to unravel.
Absolutely. Mm. Yeah. 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 And in that regard, I've talked to a lot of people who like, if you try to say, well, we've debunked all these famous psychics, we have run stings on them, and we know they're reading faked Facebook pages. I always have trouble with that, faked Facebook pages, which we've done stings like that. They'll say, well, yeah, you got that fake person, but my psychic is real because they told me something they couldn't have known any other way but by paranormal powers. So this is, again, you know, I want to believe it. You don't want to be convinced you were wrong, especially if there's an emotional element to it. If you've gone to a medium who's told you you're in communication with your dead child, right? Mm-hmm. It's hard to accept that you were conned.
Mm-hmm. You know, Rob, that's interesting too, but a lot of people who actually present and expose how these so-called mediums and psychics operate, sometimes people will still believe. So you get well-known examples like your Derren Browns or whatever, who will actually explain how he does it. And people will still walk out sometimes and be convinced.
That's fascinating. I've heard Penn and Teller say, well, Penn say, Teller doesn't say anything. Penn say that after their show, they stand out in the lobby and they have a crowd around them and they answer all the questions. And every once in a while, they'll have somebody do just what you said. Well, the trick you did with that way, tell me the truth. That was magic powers, right? And no, I told you, I can't tell you how I did it, but that was a deception. No, come on, you have secret magic powers. Yep. And you cannot convince that person. That's not the case.
Interesting. Wow. Yeah.
I don't know why that happens, but it apparently does all the time. So, So one thing I wanted to mention regarding, so the skeptical movement does several things in regard to pushing back on psychics and mediums. We do stings against the famous ones. Ken was involved in one. Susan Gerbic writes about them all the time. She sends teams of people in playing roles, and the person who's supposedly reading from dead, hearing from dead relatives, feeds back people's information from beyond that just came from Facebook that was made up by a team of people that the people that they're reading don't even know. So they can't later say, oh, I read your mind, because the people sitting, and undercover don't even know what's on the Facebook page. And it gets all recorded and it's like, oh yeah, we wrote that. We put that on the Facebook page. So, but the sad thing is it hardly matters. There's somebody named Thomas John, who's very famous because he's been on two networks, the Seatbelt Psychic, and was on one, I think that's Lifetime, and the Thomas John Affair was on another network, Thomas John Experience, where both cases where he drove around in a vehicle and like read people who got into his car, or he stopped and went into a place and read people there that supposedly didn't know anything about this. But then Susan investigates and finds out, oh yeah, that's an actor they hired. He's on IMDb for the episode. They may not have known that this was going to happen, but the producers knew who this was and were able to give the information out easily and research them. Right. So things like that. But this gets written up, it gets covered, sometimes in big places. The New York Times wrote an article about one of the things we did against Thomas John. And yet Caesar's Palace hires him as the house show the next year.
Wow.
An evening with Thomas John, you'll be amazed. You can talk to your dead relatives.
Wow. That must be incredibly frustrating.
It is frustrating. James Randi, one of the fathers of modern skepticism, called them unsinkable rubber ducks. all we can do is try to push back as best we can to try to help some people, but not everyone wants to be or can be helped.
Yeah. And I guess we have pages
where we argue with believers in these specific people and point them to the videos, the New York Times article showing that these people are frauds, and they go, no, you don't know what you're talking about.
Wow, fake news, it's fake news.
Yeah, I guess some people just want to be entertained too, and they'll just go along with it. They don't. Truth is not as important as holding on to their belief or at the entertainment.
That's absolutely true. So one of the things people always say is, well, maybe some people are, really have powers and they're not the ones famous on TV. They're not putting themselves out. They don't have anything to prove. Well, so there is this thing I'm going to show you now, which there used to be a $1 million US paranormal challenge. It was for decades. James Randi Educational Foundation ran it. He retired. So that is no longer in effect. But there is still a group of challenges all around the world that add up to well over $1 million. The largest one, I think, is for the organization that I write for, Center for Inquiry. They're the parent organization that makes Skeptical Inquiry magazine. And you could win $250,000 by proving you have paranormal abilities of any kind, dowsing, you're a psychic, you're a medium, you can do Reiki, any of these, energy claims that are nonsense. So all you have to do is apply and agree to the test. And it's amazing how many people do this, agree to the test that says, oh yes, definitely, I can do that. And then they just utterly fail. And it's like nobody has ever passed these tests.
Now, what happens when people apply for these? I mean, do you think that they actually believe that they have these powers?
So
and they're surprised?
I know people who are on the committee, and I've talked to them and asked them that very question, Carr. And some of them are mentally ill. All right, right. So an example of that was this guy who last summer, so it was during the pandemic, and they did the test in the parking lot. He claimed he can teleport from one chair to another as long as it was like within 10 feet. And he could also, there's two things. He could move the clouds the way, whatever he wanted. So, you know, they tried to, well, let's do the chair one. That's easier. Yeah, I can't tell if you pointed the clouds, if it moved because you pointed at it or moved. They might have tested the clouds, I don't know, but I remember the chair one because they said, okay, we're going to put a video camera here. We're going to record you. We want you to do this. And he gets up, moves from one chair, sits down in the other chair, and he goes, see, I just teleported.
Oh.
Yeah. Now, I don't know what to make of that other than mental illness because he clearly didn't think he was going to fool anybody. But it seems to me from the recorded ones I have watched, most of these people believe they can do what they think they can do because they've deluded themselves. Right. It's confirmation bias. People reinforce
what echo chamber.
Do it right. It's an echo chamber. Mm-hmm. Right. If you're reading tarot cards, you say something to someone and they say, oh, yeah, that really worked. That helped me. But, you know, but then you do it in a controlled study and it's just 50-50 or whatever the odds would be. Dowsers is the most famous one. For people who don't know what that is, it's using rods to find stuff that you can't see with your eyes. It's either buried or it's in a box. It could be water, it could be minerals. People sold bomb detection devices to the armed forces in Iraq when America was there that could sniff out bombs before they went through control gates. And there, it's just magical nonsense that you hold rods and they're supposed to be. And that one was unbelievable. You put a picture of the type of explosive you were looking for in the box, and then the rods would know to point to it if that explosive was in there. And not only the Iraqi army, I think the U.S. Army bought this stuff. And then they found out, oh, the guy bought like golf ball detection devices, which were also bullshit, for finding lost golf balls if you hit them, you know, into the rough. Mm-hmm. And they sold them as bomb equipment at like 100 times the cost and got people killed. But so dowsing is that you can hold rods or a pendulum and find hidden stuff. And the people who do this usually believe they can because they know where the stuff is.
Yeah. Right.
In advance, right? But as soon as you double blind it, they don't do it any better than chance. And then when you show them that they failed, oh, there's bad energy here because people are skeptical or there was something wrong. You know, it's never that, no, I'm wrong, I don't have these superpowers.
These magical powers are really delicate, it sounds like. They just only work when you're not testing delicate. Them.
And it's interesting that dowsing, or as it was also known as divining or water divining, wasn't it? And so that led to
water witching. Water witching is another name. Yeah,
that there's an almighty or supernatural being guiding the hand. So it all ties into that whole belief structure, that whole thinking process.
Right, right. So I think she's gone now because she said she had to leave early. Susan Gerbic, she is the one who writes all about the mediums, and she calls them grief vampires. Because they, you know, suck the blood, the lifeblood out of people who are already grieving. And so you could find her as an author, and she talks, she has many articles on a lot of subjects, but a lot of them have to do with showing that these famous mediums are just full of it. There's the guy I talked about before, Thomas John. Yeah. So one of the more disastrous ones was Operation Onion Ring, Thomas John and the Children. He charged 8 children, well, their family, $400 to have a Zoom session with him so he can talk to their dead relatives. And they were like, I think it was 6 to 12 years old. So parents who believe this clearly, you know, wanted to sit down with him, and they subjected their children to this. And the really interesting thing about that was, of the 8 people there, 2 of them were Susan's plants. These were people who were pretending to be other people. They were skeptical activists. They were atheists, in fact. And they had put a backstory in, which Thomas John just took hook, line, and sinker. He just, like, there was an initial email that was sent to him. I'd like to sit in. This is my story. And he just read all that back like he was talking to their dead relatives.
Wow.
You know, and they're sitting there smirking, and he's got no idea. And on top of that, there was a blank little panel. He did it on Zoom just like this, which was like the M I'm seeing at the bottom. Well, that was Susan watching the whole thing and recording it. His biggest, you know, person that would write about him, his biggest villain in his eyes, he knows who she is. You know, he says nasty things about her on Facebook, and he had no clue that she's recording this whole thing. And one quarter of the people there were her plants.
Wow.
Where was that skeptical ability to read
the psychic
that?
Ability? Ooh, yes.
Psychic. No. Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. It just failed.
Just, wow. But it was because of all that bad energy in the room.
Yeah, that's right.
You and have to want to believe it for it to work.
Unbelievably, that is the thing that sometimes people say.
Ooh, it's like they're just basically right. outing themselves.
Right, this only works too,
if you're
right?
very credulous.
Right? You can only right. understand the Bible if you have faith in the Bible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Secular reasoning.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm.
And the last person I want to point to, which is kind of an overlap in the atheist community and the skeptical community, is Holy Kool-Aid. Probably a lot of people know who that is, but some people might not. He has a YouTube mm-hmm. channel. He was the child of evangelical missionaries off in Asia trying to convert, I think, Muslims. And he had a change of heart. And now he's got a channel that talks not only about, you know, the problems with Christianity and religion in general, but also he's great at debunking psychics. He's got so many things on great psychic fails, you know, how we know what psychics are doing and how they're doing these tricks. And so you can go back and forth between his religious videos and his stuff talking about how we know that this stuff is not real.
Ooh, excellent. Yeah, that's another YouTube channel that I enjoy. So I just dropped a link in the chat.
Great.
You know, speaking of that, some people have been asking in the chat some variations of, you know, where do people come up with these paranormal beliefs? What makes them believe in them? Why do people believe these things that seem so outrageous?
I think this is all Helen's fault. We'll have to go watch her talk about Wicca and those kinds of beliefs, because some of it must be from there. But I don't know. Most of these are age-old issues that just have been believed by people forever. And then occasionally something new gets tacked on. There's always been something about energy healing of some sort. But, you know, as time has gone on, somebody in their basement chamber decides, oh, if I touch your spine this way, it really fixes your spleen. And that became chiropractic, right? Another person looks in someone's eye and sees a spot, and that clearly means you have liver disease, and that becomes whatever the hell that is.
Reflexology.
Thank you, Sasha. Reflexology is all these things you just keep tacking on, and they all have to do with energy manipulation and medication. And there's no science about this at all. There is no proof of this energy. There's no way to measure it. And in tests, it absolutely, utterly fails, just like the dowsing experiments. But yet, the practitioners think it works. Homeopathy, although not exactly the same thing, again, someone came up with this idea. Mostly, by the way, if one person comes up with an idea, it's probably wrong. This is my own opinion, because all of these things are one person coming up with an idea and then it's spreading. I used to have a thing on my whiteboard at work. The thing that's wrong with humanity is somebody comes up with bullshit and everyone else believes it. And, you know, I can name so many things like that. Homeopathy is the low-hanging fruit of alternative medicine. It is literally magic water. And my organization is having trouble suing CVS and Walmart for selling it like it's real medication. Because everyone just believes this.
And I think that answers the question I was about to ask you. Many people ask questions. They say, what's the harm? Let people believe what they want to believe. They want to believe in ghosts. They want to believe in the paranormal. They want to believe in woo and you know, alternate medicine. What's the harm in that? I think you've already answered.
I could go on a little more on that. I've given presentation specifically, and we can look it up here on RFR. One was, what's the harm in believing in psychics? One of my favorite or least favorite topics to deal in, because it harms so many people. So Bob Nygaard is a private eye who helps people who have been conned by psychics and mediums as best he can, but not many people do this in the country. And you can look at this article and go to the notable psychic fraud cases and read these, and they're sad. People losing hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars of their money and their family's money to psychics and mediums who've told them that they are possessed or they you know, have some kind of bad juju and only they can fix it. So this is part of the problem with watching the stuff on TV and believing Thomas John is real. He's the seatbelt psychic, right? So you know, I said that any network which shows this kind of stuff has blood on its hands, because Thomas John might not rip everyone off for, you know, hundreds of thousands of millions of dollars. But seeing this promoted on the media as if it is real convinces people that Mary Jane, the psychic on the store on their corner, could be for real, and they go in and trust her. And then some percent of people are going to be ripped off for their life savings.
Right.
Totally unnecessarily.
So they either they lose financially or they lose their control in over their autonomy and their thinking.
Absolutely. Yeah, I actually got into this, and I'll tell it quickly here. I told a longer version when I talked about the trouble in believing in psychics. I got pulled into this because I interviewed Bob Nygaard. I wrote his Wikipedia article. Then I interviewed him. I wrote a Skeptical Inquirer article about him, about all his good work. And because that was on the internet, people were able to Google psychic fraud and come up with my email address, because it's connected to my Skeptical Inquirer column. And they wrote me, and someone wrote me, I lost my whole life savings, $42,000 to this psychic. Please help me. Oh my God, like I'm not in law enforcement. What can I do? She sent me the copies of the court papers and whatever. And as it turned out, in her jurisdiction in Connecticut, it's not a crime. She had to sue in civil court to try to get her money back. And she had no more money to hire a lawyer to do this. So you can see it too. So, you know, that got me pulled even further into trying to fight this battle to try to prevent people from becoming victims.
Yeah.
So it's not just harmless fun and.
Yeah. And even any of the things that maybe, okay, maybe you're not going to fall for the psychic losing thing. But when you have a lack of critical thinking and don't understand human frailties and biases and logical fallacies, you're more likely to, hey, I believe Bill Gates is putting microchips in vaccines and I'm not going to get vaccinated. And then you die and leave your kids alone.
Yeah. I was going to ask about that. I mean, given, you know, all of the current events and things that, you know, have lent themselves to some people maybe not being very skeptical about some of the claims that have come out. Do you have any brief advice on what can people do to inoculate themselves against these kinds of scams and,
claims? So the shorter story, but it'll take you more time, is to go watch my other presentation, which is on the RFRX YouTube channel, Critical Thinking 101. How to inoculate yourself against false beliefs, but part of that presentation was showing things like, you know, how to understand human biases and how to understand when you're not thinking correctly because you've been convinced of something, or you've convinced yourself of something for a very bad reason. So I wanted to talk a little bit about, if we have time, on logical fallacies.
Yeah, okay. Let's do it. We got a few minutes.
Okay, so let's see. Okay, so I'm going to share this and hopefully it shares all the pictures at once when I click it. Okay, if I click through this, do you see more than one? Is it going through them?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, good. All right, so I have done a Logical Fallacy of the Week series literally every Monday, I think it was. I released one a week for 52 weeks. And this was to discuss these things at work when I was still working with people. And then I posted them online on my public Facebook page. And I'm re-releasing them now as we speak. But what I did today was I pulled out the ones that most are applicable to paranormal beliefs, especially, you know, from people coming out of a religion. So all of these things help one believe in the wrong thing, right? And I'm going to go through them quickly here. Use of anecdotal evidence, right? It's our tendency to believe our own observations or what other people tell us that they've observed over what science tells you. From the consensus of experimentation, right? That's a big one. Science shows homeopathy is just literally water. Well, my friend said it works and she cured her migraines. Therefore, it works. Right? Mm-hmm. Appeal to authority, right? When you're coming out of a religion, you always had an authority telling you what was the truth. This is something which is kind of human and religion takes advantage of it, but so do all these nonsense claims, right? Pretty much anybody will stand up on television, I understand this better than anyone, and this is the truth. Yeah.
The man in the white emotions, coat.
Right.
Yeah.
So the way I formatted these was a description of the logical fallacy, and then an example, which was all different things. So I'm not going to read through the examples because some of them don't pertain to what we're talking about here, but each of the fallacies can be used, you know, to get you to believe a lot of different things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, appeal to emotion is like, oh, how could you not believe there's an afterlife and a soul? That would be horrible, right? Mm-hmm. Therefore, that's a good reason to believe it? No, right? Appeal to possibility. This is less known, right? This is when you assume it's true because there's a possibility for it to be true, mm-hmm. right? No, There could be many possibilities. Doesn't mean it's true. This is a big one in religion, as well as in what we're talking about tonight, right? Something is true or beneficial because it's been believed or practiced for a very long time, whether that's your religion or, you know, a traditional Chinese medicine and acupuncture.
How could it be wrong if people have been practicing it for centuries?
Absolutely. And they say it's true. You combine these fallacies in one statement and it sounds like it can't be wrong. Millions of people have believed it for thousands of years, right? And everyone tells me it's true. That's three logical fallacies. And that is enough to get somebody to believe anything when they don't understand that is fallacious reasoning and you shouldn't make a decision that way. This one you hear a lot on Calls to the Atheist Experience, but it's true for these subjects too, right? I don't understand how can a door close in a room where no one's there? It has to be a ghost, right? The example here was intelligent designer created the universe, but it's the same kind of a thing. It can't be the other way. It's a ghost. This is similar, right? Argument from ignorance. I don't understand. The other one is I don't understand. This one is it isn't understood. Right. It just has not understood. You have not proved there are no ghosts. Therefore, there are ghosts. And we talked about this, right? Argument to the people. So many people believe it has to be true. Everyone believes in ghosts. Probably slight exaggeration, but a huge percent too, maybe 40%. So shifting the burden of proof. Yes, you have not proved that mediums cannot talk to the dead. Therefore, I'm going to assume they do. Right. This is a rare one, but I found this very fascinating. You've proved, my example here would be, you've proved Tyler Henry and Teresa Caputo, the Long Island medium, and Thomas John and Matt Fraser, name all the psychic mediums that are on television. Yeah, you've busted them all. We haven't busted them all, but say we did, right? But that doesn't prove there's not somebody out there who's real, right? It doesn't prove they're all fake. So in other words, if there are so many examples, something has to be true. And no, it doesn't.
No.
Right? Incomplete evidence, kind of similar, but it's basically you yourself ignoring the disconfirming information. It's kind of like confirmation bias. It's the way you go do it, right? You cherry pick what you want to look at.
Counting the hits and ignoring the misses.
Exactly. Hasty generalization. That's similar. Yeah, well, yeah, probably. The things move around in the dark and you hear weird voices and probably a ghost. And this is what we were talking about before, sunk cost fallacy, right? I'm so far into this that the consequences to my maybe finances or maybe just emotional well-being to back out is horrible. So you also call the argument from inertia. It's hard to change direction. Toupee fallacy. Let's see. An example of this would be, well, I know a ghost when I see one. Do you really? Like, there's no scientific ghost in a jar that you can compare the ghost you think you've seen to. So how can you do that? So those are some of the ways, and they all combine in people's heads to make them believe these unfortunate wrong things that can in fact be dangerous to your pocketbook or even well-being.
Right. Those were brilliant. Can you put that in the chat again, the link for if anyone's missed it, and we'll put it afterwards. But that was fantastic.
I'll drop it again.
So I had the link that you could copy to Kara to it yeah
is.
That's it.
Right. There it is. Yeah,
I just had a certain set of those, but those are all 52 that I decided to use.
Logical Fallacies of the Week series on Facebook.
And it was going on, by the way, during the Trump administration. So some of them are somewhat political. Actually, there was an interesting podcast called Fallaciously Trump. And every week was just discussing his latest tweets or pronouncements and saying all the logical fallacies. This is terrible.
Oh, my goodness. That's great. That must have been really therapeutic for whoever was making that. Well, Rob, we are getting close to running out of time. Before we go to some questions, do you have any final points that you want to share with us?
No, I think I covered pretty much what I wanted tonight. It was a great opportunity to be able to do all of that at once. It's of course, a very small subset, as I said before. of what the skeptical movement is involved with, but I think it's one of the big ones that might resonate with recovering from religion clients. So glad I got to do it.
Oh, thank you. I am too. This has been great. I was looking forward to this talk for a while. And every time you give a talk about this, it comes up in subsequent shows and hangouts for weeks afterwards. So looking forward to the follow-up questions and comments.
I'm curious if there was one person, and I don't remember if it was an RFRX. No, yes, it was. It was late at night. So by the way, after the talks are done in RFRX, for people who don't know, we keep the video chat stream going. And sometimes people stay on till like 3 a.m. East Coast time, just chatting. So one of those nights I was on late, it was down to maybe 10 people. And someone asked me about the psychics and I talked to, and a woman interrupted, "Don't say anything bad about psychics. I'm a psychic."
Oh yeah, I remember that.
You were there? Yeah.
Yeah.
And you've been through the whole presentation. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh. Well, there's fantastic material today, Rob. Thank you. And lots of questions were coming through. The chat was running hot. And apologies if we've missed any questions. It wasn't intentional. We just literally couldn't keep up with everything that was being sent directly to us or via the chat. So we do apologize. We've got a list of a few questions. Have we got time to throw a few more of those at you, Rob?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah.
Leave it to you, Cara. Which ones?
All right. Yeah, we can trade off. Let's see, we've got a few on here that I've collected so far that we haven't talked about yet. You know, someone was wondering if you know, are there any biological things that might correlate with higher or lower levels of skepticism? Someone's wondering, are there certain brain regions that are more active when someone is engaging in skeptical thinking, or any particular genetic components that might predispose people in that direction? Or do you know if there's ever been any kind of brain scans or anything done about this?
I haven't seen anything about the physiology of the brain in that regard. There could be, I just don't know. But I have read articles about personality types who are more prone to believe some of these things. And I don't know if the science is good in those articles, by the way, because psychology is a really hard thing to run, you know, repeatable experiments on and all that kind of stuff. But there was some, you know, some notion that needed to be replicated and whatever, that people of certain personality types were definitely more prone to believing in things because their gut wanted them to, rather than people who have the tendency, perhaps like me, to want better evidence and think about it non-emotionally.
Well, that's really good. And that ties in with another question somebody gave us, is how do we deal with someone who doesn't truly understand what evidence is?
That's a tough one. And that is a big problem. I have personal friends who that is the problem. It's like what they accept as, you know, we started with the phrase Carl Sagan is famous for, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. They didn't agree on what extraordinary was. And if you can't get an agreement on what is at least sufficient evidence, it's hard to come to an agreement on like what you're going to agree is real and true. Because yeah, like the friend would say, I saw a picture on Google search and it's a giant skull about the size of a whole person. There's evidence, Rob. Like, not sufficient evidence. It's evidence. It's not sufficient evidence for you to believe an extraordinary thing like there was humans that were 100 feet tall. But in his mind, for some reason that I cannot fathom, it was enough. And part of it, Sasha, is because he told me so. He wanted to believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is a friend of mine. I'm not going to use his name. If he ever listens to this, I'm sure he wouldn't. But it was, we always head-to-head arguments about these things, polite at work. He was on the believing everything side pretty much. And I was like, really? Why do you believe that? And one day we were talking about aliens. He really was into aliens. Aliens run the US government. There's alien bases under all of the airports in the US. There's alien bases on the far side of the moon, all that kind of thing, right? And I was finally showing it, no, there's not this, there's evidence is not here. And he just stopped the discussion and said, Rob, if you take this away from me, I have nothing to live for.
Right.
Wow.
So, and that's a wow. That's right. So, okay. I got to go talk to you later. It's like, wow, if that's true, you know, I don't want you to go off yourself. But like, it wasn't even the soul we were talking about in religion. He is just so invested that he has this scoop on these things that science doesn't believe in, but he thinks are true, that it's so important to him that if apparently, if it were shown to his satisfaction not to be true, he would have nothing to live for.
Right. Wow. Some people are defined by their belief structures, whatever they are, and you take that away. It's a sunk cost fallacy, as you spoke about. You take that away, they're so invested in it. What defines them? Who are they? Yeah, that's very interesting.
It's sad.
Wow, that really is. Well, and really kind of makes you kind of put in perspective, you know, we're talking about all of these, you know, oh, how are we going to have better conversations with people and get them to, you know, understand my evidence and things like that. But also, you know, going back to what Sasha was talking about earlier, you know, the importance of putting people first when we're having these conversations and not having them in a way that's harmful as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Recovering from Religion is a nonprofit organization whose mission it is to provide hope, healing, and support to those struggling with issues of doubt and non-belief. Hope, healing, and support is waiting for you on our website, recoveringfromreligion.org. There you can speak or chat with a trained agent who will work with you through your struggles and doubts or to help find resources that may work for you. You can also find local Recovering from Religion support groups in your area for the long-term recovery work. Resources specifically curated for those struggling with doubts, disbelief, and trauma can also be found on the RFR website. To connect with a secular therapist in your area, go to seculartherapy.org and create an account. If you'd like to support the work that RFR does, you can donate or sign up as a volunteer on the Recovering from Religion website. It's also a big help subscribing to the RFR YouTube channel, our blog, or following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Questions, comments, and suggestions can be emailed to us at rfrx@recoveringfromreligion.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope you'll be with us next time on the Recovering from Religion podcast.